Good afternoon, St. Louis. GGS on KMOX. Happy Monday to everybody. It's going to be a big baseball day here at KMOX at 2 p.m. There is a major press conference. And so much so that we made Wheeler come back to work early. So we're probably all getting COVID.
Hey,
so
I hope. First of all, I'm
fine. Hope you guys enjoy this.
I tested negative this morning. Okay. Second of all.
For COVID or for something else?
Else.
I don't know what you test yourself for. It's your personal business.
Why'd you ask him about it?
It was a COVID test.
Stuff I've heard.
It's probably a drug test.
It could have been.
Steve made him take a drug test.
There's got to be something going on with you.
That supplement superstore stuff you're taking.
No, I'm high on Mountain Dew. In fact, I think the Mountain Dew is probably why I didn't get the COVID.
It could be.
It could be.
It's a disinfectant.
Why are there 500 different kinds of Mountain Dew?
Because they're all
because there are people
amazing.
Like Andrew.
There's a market for it.
The truth is, like, if you look at like the hardcore Mountain Dew, Diet Mountain Dew audience is like people our age, like in their 40s, 50s, early 60s.
J.D. Vance.
But then everything, so everything under that is all the people that like the flavors.
Here's why I should never bother preparing for the show. Like, we're 3 minutes in.
Yeah.
We have the biggest press conference in 30 years for St. Louis Cardinals, and now we're like, the code red is...
Well, there's a code red with the Cardinals.
That's true.
Yeah, you're right.
So here's my question as an outsider. Do you guys already know what they're going to say? Like, does Katie Wu know and does Bernie know? And
so,
they're just not telling us?
I won't speak for everyone else, but it's somewhere along the lines, all along the spectrum, right? Like, there are some things I'm pretty sure about, but there are things I don't know as well. And I would say that's probably the same for everybody else, but I would bet that, like, the people that are there every day, Derek Gould, Katie Wu, they probably have more certainty about what's going to happen. But this team is really close to the vest about things. They don't typically have a lot of leaks. They don't typically have a lot of information getting out. Which is why last week's story was kind of interesting, because that's not normal for the Cardinals.
Katie Wu's story.
Right, Katie Wu's story in The Athletic outlining people in the organization saying we're broken, we need to get fixed, right? That's not normal for this organization. So that's either one of two things. That is, these people that are speaking are just so fed up with not having change that they're like, forget it. I know it's not the Cardinals' way to do things, but we got to get this word out there. People need to know. Or they're already seeing those changes, and they feel more comfortable saying those things because they know those changes are coming.
Chances that ownership put it out there intentionally, even in a situation where it's not what they usually do?
I doubt that.
I doubt it,
ownership.
It was ownership. But I'm going to say this not knowing, but my instincts would say that at least some of that was also from Mo.
So I don't expect you to give me names or anything, but what kinds of things should we be anticipating?
So I tweeted a little bit about it a bit ago, just kind of like, okay, look, because look, I don't have people over there that are like calling me and saying, here's what's going to happen. That's not happening. I know enough people, though, and have over time have had enough conversations. I feel like I have a pretty good idea, but not exact. I wouldn't expect the big blockbuster announcements that will excite a fan base and get everybody fired up. I wouldn't expect that. One reason is it's not typically what the Cardinals do. They're not about bluster. They're not about the big blockbuster changes. I don't expect a big change. Like, I don't think Mo's going to get up there and say, I'm stepping down today. I don't think they're firing the manager. I think what you're going to hear them outline is understanding that what they've been doing has not been working. They're going to be making changes in how they evaluate, draft, and develop players. And I hope we're going to hear something about how they will help players at the major league level better as well.
Yeah.
We need to hear about technology. We need to hear about they need to add so much more staff. They are so short on player development staff compared to other teams. I think in Katie's story, she pointed out the numbers, but the Cardinals have five what you would call kind of like roving instructors that are in charge of positions, right? So you have an outfield guy, you have a catching guy, you've got a pitching guy, you've got an infield guy. They have five of those level employees. The Brewers have 17.
So can I just ask this, like, when I said earlier, like, you want to point the finger at somebody, right? Because in Katie Wu's story, one of the quotes was, I don't know how this got effed up so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a baseball genius. I get there was like, well, the Cardinal way. How do the Cardinals organization see that we've got four or five coaches? That's fine. Every other team has 15, 16, 17, 18 coaches. We have five. Who was okaying that?
Good question. I mean, Mo's in charge of baseball. So yeah, everything's on Mo when it comes to that, right? The man in charge is where everybody's going to point. Truthfully, the owner is the one that dictates where the organization goes. I mean, it's Bill DeWitt Jr. I mean, he's going to decide, are we going to allow the budget to cover...
That's what it is.
10 more employees that are full-time at this level and analysts and all that. So, I mean, baseball decisions are Mo's. But the big picture is a combination because Mo and Bill DeWitt Jr. are pretty much... tied together at the waist. I mean, they are one and the same in terms of how the team makes decisions. They do things as a team, and I would include Bill DeWitt the third in that too. I mean, the three of them are kind of the triumvirate, right? It's not that one of them is telling the others what to do. Although the one guy that is in control is Bill DeWitt Jr., right? If the owner and he, keep in mind, people, he's the chairman of the team. He is not the only owner of this team. They have an ownership group. And there are a lot of voices in that group, and some of them have weight and have say in the direction. So while DeWitt is the controlling interest and he's the chairman, he has partners. So it's more than, and this is why when people ask me this question, I always tell them, it's not as simple as you think it is, but it's also not as complicated sometimes as the team makes us think it is. So you got to kind of take all of that in. But if some person has the most control over the ship, it's the chairman, it's Bill DeWitt Jr. But he does not have sole say over the budget and over those things because he has partners who also have a say in that.
So let me ask you guys this. We brought it home, 83 wins, 79 losses. For most teams, that's a normal year.
It's fine.
It's a fine year. Hey, can't wait to see in spring training. Maybe we'll do better. For St. Louis, it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Especially two down years in a row.
Yeah, if you had won 98 games last year, this year would be less of a big deal.
Do you look at it, especially as an outsider who's now an insider,
mm-hmm.
as a badge of pride? Like, we just don't accept mediocrity, or are we a little spoiled?
I mean, I think it's there is a little bit of spoiled, but I don't say that in the negative way because the team has proven that they have the ability to sustain success, right? So that should be your expectation. If you have a child that proves to you, let's say through their sophomore or junior year of high school, that they're a straight-A student, what's your reaction going to be if they start coming home with C's? Your reaction is going to have a talk. We have to figure this out. Why is it going this way? What do we need to do to fix it? That's basically what's happened because the Cardinals are not a big market team. But they draw like the Dodgers and Yankees. Their attendance is always at the very top.
Which is us doing our part.
That's right.
And they also get revenue sharing, too.
That's right. And they end up getting some benefits. They get some, compensatory picks because they're not a major market team. They don't have the same TV deals as the big teams. But, Dave, the way you put it is 100% the truth. The fans of the Cardinals, and that's Cardinals Nation, the region, not just the people of St. Louis, but all the people that come in from Arkansas and Iowa and Illinois and everywhere else. That's what makes it possible for them to have the big payroll, because by drawing 3 million fans a year, by fans filling up the stadium, you're giving them the resources to compete at that highest level, which is why the expectations are high, because the fans are doing their part. That and to me, that changes what is expected of the team.
And they have told the fan base that's what they expect.
Correct.
Every year. We can do it. See, this is how we've done it. We've shown it to you for 20 years.
Correct.
So now the fans are conditioned to expect that.
Yes.
And they are right to expect
it. They absolutely are. Because, again, the fans have been doing their part. For 20-plus years, they've been doing their part.
I know this is baseball is ultimately a business, but I do think it gets super personal in St. Louis. do you think some of our expectations, not only because, yes, we're the Cardinals, we win, that's what we do, but also St. Louis is the Cardinals in a way that New York is not the Mets.
That's a good point. I mean,
New York, even the Yankees. New York is not the Yankees because New York is still New York,
it's
right?
It's not the first thing you think of.
It's not always the first thing you think of, but with St. Louis, it's like our selfhood is pretty deeply intertwined with the Cardinals.
Imagine, and this would never happen, but imagine if the Cardinals left.
Oh, it's...
It would be...
The city's gone. That's
honestly,
how I feel.
The only thing that could be worse in sports is if the Packers left Green Bay.
That's a good analogy.
The team is so important to the city here. The only other sports city might, or Buffalo.
Yeah.
Right?
With the Bills.
With the Bills,
yeah. Because I know Yankees fans are passionate. That's not what I'm saying. Like, the Yankees would never leave New York, but if they did, New York's still New York.
Right, right.
St. Louis is
so
the
So, like,
Cardinals
all the football teams that left Los
deep.
Angeles over the years.
LA's still
didn't
LA.
Change LA.
Yeah,
right?
Still
didn't
LA.
Change LA. It's still Los Angeles. You're right. I think that's a great way to look at it.
Which even shows it because the Rams, they are a big deal. But we were still St. Louis because of the Cardinals.
True.
Yeah.
We could never lose the Cardinals.
So our buddy Ben Boyd runs the Cardinals radio network, 130, 140 affiliates. Does every team have that, or is that kind of unique to the Cardinals?
The Cardinals, I think, have the largest.
It's a large affiliate.
They have the largest network in baseball. The most affiliates.
Which, let's just take credit, is because of KMOX.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because of the clear signal, whatever it's called, where
clear channel signal,
after dark it goes out over pretty much used to listen in Detroit.
I mean, I have heard it not only when I was a kid. I used to listen as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, I would listen because I grew up in Detroit. I listened to Ernie Harwell and Paul Carey call the Tigers game, but we're on Eastern time, so the game would end, and then I could spin around, and boom, I could get to 11:20 and hear Jack Buck calling Cardinals games.
Crazy.
And as a baseball nerd, that's what I did as a kid. That stuff still, you can pick up KMOX at night.
So
if the weather conditions are right, all the way up to the Rockies, going west, north into Canada. There are people that listen to blues games in Canada, and you can pick it up in northern Florida.
My friend Brian went fishing in Canada this summer, and every night they listened to Cardinals baseball on KMOX in Canada.
Now, some of it has to do with the weather and how many clouds there are. Fewer clouds means the waves can bounce higher and go further, but still, on a normal night, you can hear KMOX at night almost the entire from the Rockies all the way east.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX 123. So we're just talking about how huge the reach is of KMOX, and there are just tons of people listening right now, and I couldn't be more comfortable. I'm not the least bit nervous. I don't care if there's 100,000 people listening. Doesn't bother me. And then on the break, Wheeler goes, Derek Gould's listening. I'm like, oh, God. Lock it up. Lock it up.
By the way, tease, he's coming on later, too.
Nice.
After
Very nice.
The presser.
Okay, but aren't you, if I told you right now 1 million people are listening, you'd be like, okay. But if I told you right now there are 4 people listening, that's way more nerve-wracking, isn't it?
100%.
Well, if one person takes a nap, you lose 25% of your audience.
No, it's not only that. It's just I feel judged by 4 people because a million people, it's too many people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Some are like it, some's not.
Yeah, it's whatever. But 4 people, I'm like, what if they all hate me?
What if somebody named Bob?
This is Bob. I'm one of the 4.
Hey, Bob.
I hate you.
No, the smaller the crowd, the more intense it is.
Yep.
When I used to be Glenn Beck's fill-in guy, and I'm going to guess he had 1 million listeners, I would think, and I would fill in for him, and I've said this before, I had one image in my mind. It was an old, crusty cabbie in New York City listening and going like, who the hell is this kid? Like, that's all I could think of is being judged by the
cabbie. This guy right here.
He's like, come on. Hey! And I'm just like, oh.
Hey.
That's every cab driver.
Oh!
And if it were an Irish cab driver.
Oh, it's 2022.
Oh, he's not very funny.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I should bring back Glenn.
Oh, Glenn.
I've never believed you more than when you said, I have a great Irish accent.
I know. I reveled in it driving home. If I could make that moment last.
I was like,
you were like
wait.
Literally on the edge of
I
your seat.
I could not wait. I love the Irish accent. I'm like, oh, I wish I could be Saoirse Ronan. What? Glover can do an Irish accent? I'm so excited to hear this.
She leaned into
me. Yeah. Amy would make a good fish. She gets hooked a lot.
A good fish? I know what you meant.
She takes the bait.
Hoity-toity.
The next Sweet 16 is going to be Best Nicknames of All Time, which we've never, ever done.
Really?
And the first one I thought of? Shamey. It's awesome. I'm not sure which of you came up with it, but it is.
I think it was Ron.
Yeah, it was me. Yeah.
Oh.
It's so not perfect. As good as Meatball Ron, though.
Matt calls Chris Ronjbob SquarePants.
You like that one?
I love it.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
It's not bad at all.
You like that one?
I don't mind it.
Okay. It's good.
Ronjbob SquarePants? I think it's awesome.
Hey. Sure. By all means.
Do you and Matt have like a thing?
No, it's got nothing to do with Matt. It's more to do with Ronji.
So he's your problem?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm your problem?
At almost any given point.
I don't think I'm your problem.
You don't think you're the problem?
No. Mm. No. A lot of it's internal.
Mm. Yeah. You're right.
So if he's Ronjbob SquarePants, does that make you Mr. Crab?
Sure.
These are enemies?
Well, it's Mr. Krabs.
Whatever.
I think it's more of a Squidward.
Hold on. Yeah, hold up. SpongeBob and Mr. Krabs are not enemies.
Yeah, they don't like each other.
No, yes, they do.
No, they don't.
He's always Mr. Krabs.
Yeah, Mr. Krabs doesn't like him. He's always yelling at him.
Is he the Krusty Krab?
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. He doesn't. Okay. Okay. No, everybody stop.
All it's right. Like you're always yelling at Ron.
Can I just remind you that Derek Gould is listening right now? GS and KMOX 135 on the dot. Coming up at the top of the hour, we have big press conference being put on by the Cardinals. Derek Gould just tweeted that it's going to be Bill DeWitt Jr. who's kind of leading things, right?
Sounds like it. The way that he tweeted, I didn't have time to read the story because obviously we're here. But that he's expected, the idea here is that DeWitt Jr., the chairman, is expected to, as Derek tweeted, detail roles and responsibilities. But in the headline of the story, it does say John Mozeliak, Oliver Marmol to remain in their roles,
tell me if you think I'm right, because I do still feel kind of like I'm in the back row if I'm in the room with the car. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like I'm in, boys, but I'm not in. But it seems to me that Cardinals Nation, who will be listening, are looking to be really happy or really mad. But just, I don't think they just want information. I think they're looking for, it's about time.
They want an emotion.
I can't believe that this is what you call change.
Yeah. This is basically when I tweeted out a little bit, like maybe a half hour before the show, I said, listen, this is about setting expectations. If you expect the big wow, you're going to be upset because that's not what this is going to be. This is not going to be, we're going to expand our budget to $250 million and we're going to hire Albert as the manager. This is not going to be those things. I said it this way in the tweet too, but I want to say it here too. That doesn't mean your standards shouldn't be high. Your standards should be high. You should big picture expect significant change. And that is about wins and losses.
Well, the permission to do that again came from the team.
Right.
The team said you should expect it because we expect it.
Right. And I think that's fair. So I want to be clear, though. I'm not saying people should lower their standards. I'm saying don't get your hopes up today for the big, sexy, emotional thing that you're talking about where you're going to be like, the Cardinals are saved. It's not happening today. You're probably going to be more angry than you will be happy if that's your mindset. If your mindset is, I want to know what they're going to do to fix this. Do they have a good plan? What we learned today can at least give us an idea because, and I had a really smart person on Twitter reply and say, yeah, but, you know, these things are not going to sell tickets and all that. And I'm like, yeah, right. But what sells tickets is winning. What I care about is hearing the things that will help you be a consistent winner again.
Yeah.
Because that's what sells the tickets.
You know, I had a thought that felt interesting a minute ago. But maybe professional baseball isn't so different from any other business, but it just hit me that so many jobs, like batting coach for the AA team and, player development and scouts and, people who make pretzels, there's so many people whose livelihood depend on 27 or 28 guys doing their job.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, Marmol.
And some of them they never had any contact with.
Marmol has a duty. He has a big job.
Yep.
He can make good moves. He can make bad moves. He can make moves that we like, moves that we don't. But he's not going to take a single at bat.
Nope.
You know, it's just such a gigantic business dependent on relatively small numbers of things.
Yeah. What, I forget who it was, Ron. Do you remember if it was Earl Weaver or Sparky? It might have even been Tony La Russa, but basically said, yeah, you know, a manager's decisions basically decide 10 games a year. The rest are by the players.
That's interesting.
I think a lot
it's
of
something,
it is.
That's what they, I don't think that's scientifically true.
No.
But a great manager said something like that, and it's the idea that more often than not, Sparky Anderson is one of my favorites, and his quote was, the players make the manager, it's never the other way around. And I've loved that quote since he said it.
Oh, that's always been true. But people, as we talked about this on the show earlier when Ackerman hung out with us for a bit, that people, I have always thought.
You got Tom Ackerman?
Yeah, he wouldn't believe it.
He will not do this show.
No, it's, he's probably in bed by then.
Listen, I just, you know, I personally have no problem with you guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn it. I knew there was something afoot.
But I think people dramatically overrate or overestimate how much influence a manager has.
Okay.
And I've always said that you can, a manager can do a couple of things that are important. One is create a good environment.
Yep.
For players to grow. And the other one is to have accountability for players.
Mm-hmm.
If they do something wrong, then they're accountable for it. Instead of saying, hey, you're accountable for this. Like, there needs to be action behind it. That's really it. But we complain about bullpen decisions and lineup decisions. And I am here to tell you that every single fan base of every single team is doing the exact same thing with their manager, no matter how good their manager is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
it's happening to Dave Roberts in LA every day, and they do nothing but win.
Yep.
A triathlon, right? Swim, bike, run. You can't win a triathlon in the swim, but you can certainly lose it. Is that like a manager? A manager is not really going to help the players be better, but he can destroy a few?
No,
I don't know about that.
So, like, for example, let me use Tony La Russa because everybody listening knows him. He used to do the manager show on Sunday mornings with Ron Jacober on Sports on a Sunday morning, and he would take calls from people that were always mad at him about, why did this guy sit and this guy play on Sunday? Why is the lineup like this? Why are you batting the pitcher eighth? Why did you make this pitching move? And he would answer all of those questions and he would go through it. But those were not the things that he was good at those things. But what he was really good at was, okay, this guy really needs a day off. I'm going to get him a day off.
Truly managing.
This player here, he handles sliders well. And this pitcher, he throws a lot of sliders. I'm going to give him a chance today because even though he doesn't play a lot, this is something he does well. He was great at knowing his players and his team and what they needed at a given time. That's what the managers are doing, and that and keeping. So, you know, you think about bench players, right? You got 5-6 bench players who in a lot of situations don't play very much. Well, if they don't play very much, if you have an injury, they're not going to be ready to step in. The best managers keep them ready by finding jobs for them, even if it means fans are going to be like, why is this jerk in the lineup today?
But what I think people end up thinking about is sometimes I think they conflate what a football head coach is or a football coaching staff with a baseball manager and like the hitting coach or the pitching coach, where they look at a hitting coach like, well, that's basically the offensive coordinator.
No,
no
it's not.
It's not. It's largely what the guys do is what they do. It's not, hey, I want you to on 2-0, you're swinging at this pitch. You're doing this. Like you have a game plan. But it is not constant play calling. It's not the same. The influence isn't the same. And a lot of times we think, well, if they fire the hitting coach because they're not hitting and they bring in a new guy, that's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
Which that's just not how
but
it
using
works.
Using that analogy, how many great offensive minds in football can you think of that didn't have elite quarterbacks?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, yeah.
They don't exist because you don't get the production without the elite player.
Can I interrupt you for a second? You are adorable. So these guys are having this like really heady discussion about baseball, and Andrew gets up and walks out of his room, which is always disconcerting to me because
means
that's,
something may be wrong.
That's the room, and he's in charge, and something's going on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of listening to you, but I'm watching. And then he comes walking back in, Show them what you brought back in.
A chocolate chunk cookie. Now, hang on. The actual...
And Rach and I caught each other's eyes. We're like, aww.
The actual reason I went out there is because I wanted to double check with Beth and Maria on our plan for the presser and whether or not we want to do news first.
And to see if any cookies were left.
And then I saw the cookies while I was out there. And
hey,
I thought,
two birds with one stone.
Well, hey, as long as I'm here.
Yeah.
But I was also
that
aware...
That is a pretty funny visual, though.
The way you walked in carrying it was exactly like a two-year-old. She was struggling to learn to walk.
I was strutting, and I was holding it up like this. And I suddenly, as I walked in strutting and holding the cookie, I became very aware of the optics of leaving in the middle of the segment and then coming back with
a snack.
You should have put that in your pocket.
And that's why I was not terribly surprised when this got brought up. I was like,
it's awesome.
Cookies oh, they think pockets, I just, though.
And I thought about it. I was like, oh, they think I just left and got a cookie.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Okay. So I do have a question about the coaches then, right? Because we're talking about, you know, a manager only has so much influence. A hitting coach, everybody wants to blame the hitting coach.
In every city in baseball.
In every city in baseball. At the same time, we keep one of the big issues with our development is our young players aren't ready because we don't have any coaches. So can you delineate the roles and influence of the coaches in the development program and the coaches at Major League Baseball level?
I think it's more important. Kevin will tell you this. It's more important at the developmental
100%
level.
100%. Because, like, for example, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt had so many Major League at-bats. You're not coaching them. They know what to do because they've shown you they know what to do. And if they're not doing it, it's because something's wrong physically or they're declining or they're just not in their space. And the hitting coach's job with them is to nudge them back to where they've been before, right?
Could be a psychologist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. With the younger guys, you're actually teaching and they're learning how do you take an at-bat. You know, some of these guys come in at 18 years old and... You know, they might have had a pretty good high school coach, but it's still a high school coach, and that's all they've really had. And a lot of them have private instructors who played pro or college ball. So they have an idea, but there's a difference between taking a professional at bat every time, every day. Because in high school, you play 2 or 3 games a week at most. You play 30, 40 games in your season. You play 50 games in your summer, and that's it. In baseball, you're playing every day for 5 months in the minor leagues. And a lot of it is learning how to game plan for a pitcher, how to game plan against all the... So you think about in high school, the pitchers you face, the best ones, that's every guy when you're a pro. Every guy's that good, and some of them are even better than that. So those guys are doing a lot more work on mechanics and, you know, feedback on, like, batted ball data and what you need to do this. How do you hit the ball in the air? How do you lay off the slider? Like, how do you do that? So having more numbers... with those guys is incredibly important because they need more one-on-one time. And they're learning how to do this job, where ideally the guys at the major league level know how to do it, and you're just trying to give them the environment that allows them to do what they already know how to do.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 151. At the top of the hour, you're going to hear Matt Pauly bring it in for us. He is at Busch Stadium in the studio there, the KMOX Cardinal studio, and he's going to introduce the press conference. Then we're going to run it, and it may be 10 minutes or it may be 40 minutes. And then we'll come back, and then we're going to have Bernie on and Gould and Wheeler. So it's not that everything the rest of the show is going to be baseball, but depending on what they say, we'll just kind of take it from there.
Right.
Everyone my age will remember this. Today's National Chewing Gum Day. And when I was a kid, chewing gum was my mom ripping a piece of Double Mint in half from her purse. And I thought all gum tasted like nicotine and purse dirt.
Why
right,
is that?
Right? Like Juicy Fruit was, I might as well have asked for meth. I mean, and the Fruit Stripe.
Zebra?
The zebra one.
Zebra. Yeah, what was that called?
I think it was called
Fruit Stripe.
Fruit Stripe.
Oh, was it just Fruit Stripe?
Yeah. Okay.
Fruit
Stripe gum.
So then when I got my first, like, Bubs Daddy, oh my God.
Mm.
It's like, go to rehab.
Yeah, remember that when bubble gum became chunks instead of slices?
Yeah.
Like Hubba Bubba and Bubble Yum and all that? Mm.
But chewing gum, old school chewing gum. Yeah.
Yeah, and
how about Freedent? My great-grandmother used to have Freedent.
That's awesome.
What about the...
your dentures.
What about the... I don't remember. Is it called Double Bubble? The pink bubble gum thing? Those were good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what they have in the dugout.
Those are hard, though? Are those the ones with the comics, comic
no.
on them?
No, you're thinking of Bazooka Joe.
Bazooka Joe, those were kind of hard. Like, your jaw kind of hurt when you were like...
Also, the Bazooka Joe comics made me question reality. Like, as a kid, you're like just looking for a little...
Yeah. Like a little ha-ha.
A little ha-ha.
Yeah.
And it's all existential.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is why the gum is so hard, because this comic strip is from like 1952.
Yeah, you're like, Bazooka Joe singing about leaving his wife. You're like, how old is Joe? I thought Joe was a baby.
Oh my gosh, you're right. What was this? The Big Red. My grandma had Big Red chewing gum.
Oh, yeah,
the cinnamon
one.
Of course. Yeah. I couldn't handle it.
I always felt very mature whenever I would choose the Big Red.
Really?
Well, just over juicy.
You might as well
just
smoke.
They sold it that way, though, in the commercials, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This is the grown-up gum.
Oh, yeah.
Does it still exist?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when's the last time you looked for gum?
It's been a while.
Yeah, it is weird when you do.
Yeah. I have a quick question. Guess what I saw in Switzerland, and maybe you know this already.
Big Red gum.
No, Oreo Coke.
Yeah, that's here.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
We talked about that. Yeah,
I saw at the gas station the other day, Oreo Coke Zero.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
People are saying it's not bad.
That's what it is. I don't think they have a regular version. I think it's only...
I feel like that would be way too much if it was.
Yeah,
like just a regular Coke
Oreo. No, I think it is zero. I think they made it a zero.
That's what I'm saying. That's only zero.
Did you two do each other's hair today?
I wanted to look Wheeler-ish today.
Because your hair is perfect.
Oh, really?
Don't go get another haircut. Nice. I know you schedule them every 18 days.
Let's see. When is the next one?
And you have low flow hair, but it looks good.
Which I never figured out what that means, but that's okay.
It looks feathered from
Seinfeld
the front.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little greasy, like you didn't get all the conditioner out.
There you go.
Guys,
didn't rinse it. You didn't poof it.
Okay. Well, I didn't poof it because I didn't do my usual thing because I was like, hold on. What if I want to capture some of this Wheeler confidence? Maybe it's all in the hair.
Dave, so guess when my next haircut is?
Tomorrow.
So you're kidding me.
Tomorrow.
Are you serious?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. And he's going to be 20 minutes late because he's getting his haircut.
They want all the haircuts at 9:30, so I'll be on time.
It's like you and the turf at Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
Like just.
Yep.
What do you mean?
No, they're just always cutting the grass.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know this reference.
Yeah, yeah.
They
keep it at the same level. Just... Yeah.
Yeah.
No inside joke.
Yep. It was funny because today I was like, there's a couple parts that are kind of weird. And then that's usually the sign that I need a haircut.
Huh.
Because the longer it gets, the more it does its
other
own thing.
Other parts of your hair grow faster than others?
They just do different things. Like there's a cowlick on the side and they just go in weird directions.
Interesting.
It would be crazy if you grew it out.
Oh.
It would look hilarious.
You should do that. Raise money.
Yeah, hey. Do a Prince Valiant.
If people give me money, I'll do it.
You'd look like a legitimate clown.
I know. I might look like Rommel. Yeah, yeah.
That hurt me.